Hello there, and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. I am joined by Kalen Kaler. We are going to run through all of the Sunday action from Week 11, and Kalen's got a little bit of a Tua knowledge, a little draft-centric stuff to drop on us, too.
It's pretty fun. There was some big NFL implications in yesterday's college football Saturday, so stay tuned.
There were. We're spanning 2 days. It's I don't know. I hope you stretch properly before the show. We are going to start though with the Sunday night game. The Rams 17, the Bears 7. But we're going to talk about more than the score because we at this moment look. It's a little past midnight Eastern time here. Sunday game is over. We are trying to figure out what just happened with Mitchell Trubisky at the end of that game. Was he legitimately benched? Was he, as Matt Nagy has said in his post-game availability, pulled from the game because of a hip injury that they did not want to put at risk? I know what I think, Kalen. What do you think?
I also know what I think, Gary. And not that I want to accuse them of a big cover-up, but it just seems extremely weird. Everything is very, very strange with how this rolled out. And the reasons why are, at the time, when Mitch Trubisky, his last play, there were about 8 minutes left. Then Chase Daniel came in, and by the time the Bears got the ball back, there were 3 minutes and 35 seconds left in the game, I believe. In that period of time, you know, when the Rams had the ball during that, 4.5 minutes, mm-hmm. There was no announcement by the PR staff in the press box. There was nothing really happening on the sideline to suggest that he had an injury. He didn't go into the medical tent. Trainers did not see him. He was just standing there, you know, like a normal quarterback. And then there was also the very weird and intimate conversation on the sideline between Nagy and Mitch, where Nagy like pulled him in really close and used the play sheet, as coaches do, to block their mouths so you can't lip read what they're saying. So that was really weird, because it seems like if you had an injury, like, why are you going to have this long conversation about it? And there was also not really like an evident play where we could point to like, oh, yes, he was hurt right here. So all of those things add up to an extremely questionable hip injury, in my opinion. And then when they did announce it, Chase Daniel had already been in the game for probably like a whole series.
A little late.
Yeah. So I don't know. It was just extremely weird. And when you looked at Mitch on the sideline, he really didn't look like someone who was like, oh, dang, I'm injured. I don't know. It was just, it had the vibe. It had every vibe of a benching. It just really did.
And we just, I just love how the PR staff like tweeted that out like, oh, by the way, we neglected to mention our quarterback
right.
is injured.
And then like, even on the broadcast, like Al and Chris did not really get the memo. Because the PR staff didn't actually say anything except on Twitter, and it didn't reach the broadcast booth apparently until after the game was over, and they followed up with like a, oh, by the way, here's what we just heard. And you could even tell those two were a little, they were very diplomatic about it, but they yeah. clearly had their doubts. But like, so we talked about, this was one of Mitch's kind of better games of the season.
It's a
kind of.
It's a low bar.
Relatively.
And look, I coined the term Bortles North last
yeah.
October.
It's so good. It's so fitting.
I assumed at some point, and I love being wrong when I think guys are bad. I think it's fun when guys get better and make people like me sound like idiots. It's not fun anymore.
Like,
he just keeps
just
on
not.
Getting worse and worse.
It's not.
And the bar is low, but he was, again, relative to what we've seen from him this season, we have seen him much worse this season.
Definitely.
He was passable tonight, borderline passable, let's call it. And they had a really good drive. That touchdown drive they had that ended with the back shoulder throw yep. to Tariq Cohen midway through the third quarter, that was a legit drive. A lot of the Bears' scoring drives this year have tended to be like the run-pass splits are like 8 runs, 1 pass. That was like 7 or 8 passes in like 2 runs. I mean, that was pretty good, regardless of who it was. But we should mention, to be fair, to paraphrase Matt Nagy in his post-game comments, he said the hip injury had happened about 2 series earlier than the benching or the decision to take him out of the game for injury reasons, however you want to term it. And he said they could tell because his throws were just all arm. He didn't have the torque. He didn't have the Dak Prescott dancing torque going on there. So that's why they took him out. We'll move past it because there are other interesting things that happened in the Sunday night game, mm-hmm. and then obviously a whole Sunday of interesting stuff. But when they took him out, they're down 10. It's a game where, once again, they're just not moving the ball. They're down 10 with 3:19 left. It's not over. It's highly unlikely they are going to score 10 points. I mean, it's right. this offense, you know, if there were 6 quarters left, you wouldn't be terribly confident in 10 more points. But
so true.
We have said, and we've said it plenty on this show, Trubisky has always been at his best in those, like, 2-minute hurry-up drills.
It's
and
his
it's
time
like,
to shine. That's how he shines.
I guess that you would chalk that one up in the injury category at this point, I suppose.
I guess. I don't know. There's a lot of weird things happening with this Bears team, so I'm just hesitant to really believe anything at this point.
I was going to say, your opening monologue about the weirdness with this Bears team, it could apply to so many different things that has happened yeah. with them in the past yeah. couple of months.
Because now they can't even say, I mean, this game was really a low point, I think, because now they can't even say that they solved the kicker situation because Eddie Pinheiro missed 2 field goals and last week missed an extra point.
And Kalen, obviously, as many of you know, did the definitive piece on the just sort of madcap kicker search that the Bears undertook this past spring and summer. A lot of people shook their fists at Kalen and Kalen's colleagues who will remain unnamed because they don't want to take any of the heat and want to just leave you out there on a limb to take it. But said like, oh, they did it right. Like, oh, look at this. Eddie Pinheiro made the game-winning kick in Denver and all that. And it should be mentioned, the kicker competition actually ended with a trade offer for Kare Vedvik, and he yeah. no longer kicks. So he actually won the competition. And then they ended up with Pinheiro for the 7th rounder, and Pinheiro looked, and now it's just sort of it's coming apart at the seams. That was another strange thing. And my one criticism of Nagy, I shouldn't say one, but my main criticism of Nagy over the past 2 years has been he has, I appreciate the fact that he speaks with a very positive tone when he speaks publicly. His actions tend to just sort of spell out such a lack of confidence mm-hmm. in some of his players, yes. whether it's last year, the loss of Miami, where they're, you know, they're going to be setting up for like a 50-yard field goal, and it's like a 3rd and 5, and that's a down where 98% of the time you are going to throw the ball and try and get a closer field goal. Instead, he's like running a draw play, stuff like that. He just the messaging through his decisions say, I don't have confidence in you. Usually it's Trubisky on the other side. Tonight with Pinheiro, Pinheiro misses the 47-yarder, I believe was the first
I
one
think
he missed.
So, yeah.
Sorry, he missed the 48-yarder. That was the end of the first round. 48-yarder at the end of the first drive. Then they end up with a 4th and 9 at the Rams 31, which is about a 48-yarder.
Mm-hmm.
And they go for it on 4th and 9. If you think it was more likely to convert that 4th and 9 with your offense than it was to get the 3 points with your kicker, I mean, Pinheiro has to be, if you're an NFL kicker, that's a 50-50 proposition, even if you're a low-end kicker.
Yeah.
And he went for it on 4th and 9. They turned it over on downs, and then that sort of just tells Eddie Pinheiro, I have zero confidence in you right now. I have so little confidence, I'm going to run my terrible offense out there on 4th and 9 to try and convert this in some sort of like Hail Mary scenario instead of just taking the chance for the points. And then Pinheiro missed another one, missed a 47-yarder at the end of the first quarter after the 4th and 9 debacle. And here we are.
It's so bad. I saw the stat that the league as a whole is 9 for 24 when converting pass plays into first downs on fourth down with like 8 to 10 yards to go, which is exactly that situation. So that's 37.5% chance of converting that as a league. So you have to imagine the Bears have a lower percentage of doing that just because their offense has been struggling. And you have to think, like you just said, Pinheiro, there's probably greater than a 37.5% chance that he's going to hit that field goal, I would hope. And clearly Nagy is not in agreement there with his play call.
I mean, if you have that little confidence in your kicker, he can't be your kicker.
Yeah.
You have to go like out and sign a street free agent. That makes no sense otherwise.
And he said post-game he was not going to look at other kickers this week. So
the whole thing just very much has a feel of like a small child playing Madden, like mashing all the buttons at once and just sort of hoping something good comes out of it. It seems to be there's something to be said for like gut instinct or like, you know, what we have this play in our pocket that we know will work here and let's break it out right now, and that just does not really seem to be the case either time. It just seems like a guy sort of making decisions on tilt here a lot of the times.
Yep. I would be like ready to take legal action if I was on the Bears defense at this point, because I mean, they got two takeaways in I think the first quarter alone, or at least the first half, and neither resulted in any points on the board for the Bears. And it's just at that point, what more can your defense do for you?
The defense got the takeaways. They gave up some plays in the run game early on. Mm-hmm. The Rams ran and we'll talk about the Rams offense just in a moment here, but they had a different look tonight, and it took the Bears a little while to catch on, but they did catch on. You know, they got beat on basically one drive in this game, and that was pretty much it. It was a really good performance by this Bears defense, and it's one that is still without Akeem Hicks, who's obviously a big absence there. That sort of turns them into a more mortal unit than what we've seen the last year and a half. But I don't know. I don't know what you do about that offense at this point. And I don't know. The fascinating thing is going to be, and no one asked the question of Nagy in the post game presser, and I'm sure his answer would have been, as long as Mitch is healthy, he'll start, and then, you know, it'll be like the questionable tag with a hip injury, or who knows, maybe they just put Mitch on IR or something with a hip injury later this week or something. But I don't know who's going to start for them next week. And we saw a lot more spread empty in this game from them. They didn't use the two backs a lot. I just have to say, if I'm an opposing defense, I just want to embrace Matt Nagy for a lengthy amount of time every time I see David Montgomery instead of Tariq Cohen out on the field.
Yeah.
Montgomery might be a fine player one day, but Cohen's so much more dangerous in so many ways, especially for an offense that really does not have sustained drives.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a night where Jalen Ramsey took Allen Robinson out of the game, so your number one receiver is not really a factor. And boy, what a mess. What a mess, that they made of it at this point.
It's a hot mess. It's pretty bad. I thought it was one of Tariq Cohen's better games, because he'd been like really just underutilized the whole beginning of the season. Like, we didn't see any of his big plays that he made last year. And I thought today's game was a little bit better for him, that touchdown pass and a couple other plays where he gained kind of significant yardage.
Yeah, really nice toe tap at the pylon.
Yeah.
On that back shoulder throw for the touchdown.
Very smart.
That was a nifty play.
Yeah.
Now you look on the other side of the ball, and in the Rams, you have a team that sort of displayed some more, I guess, logical problem solving is what you saw from them. And look, it's one game. Maybe this all collapses again next week. But it was a completely revamped offensive line for the Rams in this game. It was Andrew Whitworth, and then it was just four dudes who you just don't see very often or don't see them at this spot. Bobby Evans, who I believe that was his first career start, started at a right tackle, rookie third-round pick, rookie fifth-round pick. David Edwards at right guard. Austin Blythe, who has been playing guard all year, moved to center in place of Brian Allen, the struggling young center there. And Austin Corbett, who they got from Cleveland at the trade deadline, made his first start for the Rams at left guard. So, for all intents and purposes, they had four, let's call it three new linemen and four guys playing new spots on the line in this game. And you saw in the first half, and we haven't seen those outside zone runs in quite a while from the Rams, but those combo blocks, those duo blocks, those inside runs, and Todd Gurley just looked like a sort of an old school power offense right there.
Yeah, and it worked a lot better for them this game, and especially against the Bears defense. Gurley was able to put up more yards than any other running back against them this season. They have such a stout run defense there. So I think clearly this, solution on the offensive line, basically what they had to do because of the injuries, I think it's working better. And Chris Collinsworth, I was shocked. He was really in love with this offensive line. On the broadcast, it was like every other play, oh, the offensive line is looking so much better. And they did look better. That was, as you said, good problem solving there to make that work and make it a little bit more serviceable for them.
You say Chris Collinsworth, who is great, but he must have been so disappointed when they showed Bobby Evans' parents out in the crowd, because I think he was planning on like legally adopting Bobby Evans and just like loving him as his own from now on. Yeah. He was very enthusiastic about the play of Bobby Evans, rightfully so. The rookie had a really good game in his first start here. One other thing, the Rams hit. I've been wondering for so long where this has been or why it went away, and I'm sure Andy Benoit could go out and hang out with Sean McVay and
let us know.
A secret answer, but he'd never say it publicly. He'd like, I'd make Andy say it to me one day, but we'd never be able to disclose whatever happened to the Rams screen game with Todd Gurley, which just sort of, it's not been a thing this year. And you saw it a little bit more tonight, which was, it was neat. It was shades of 2017 and 2018 for this offense in very small doses. Yeah. Because overall, no Brandon Cooks, no Robert Woods. Jared Goff ends up attempting 18 passes all game. But they got some stuff going in the first half, enough to put up 10 points. They put up one drive in the second half, 71 yards, eight plays in the fourth quarter when they needed to put the game away. And that's, I don't know, that's how you win a game. That's how you win a game, and it just looked like they had a plan for how they wanted to win the game, and then they executed it, and it worked.
Yeah, imagine that. I thought... the like just biggest takeaway from watching this game was just how different like both of these teams are from last season. And just kind of, I mean, definitely for the Bears, how far they have fallen. The Rams, there's still hope alive for their season. Obviously, I think it's safe to say the Bears are pretty much done for the rest of this season. But I mean, a year ago, these two teams were, the Bears were like a double doink away from facing the Rams in the next playoff game. So it's like, wow, this is where we are with these two teams. And they look so much different. And there's just so much less of like, I don't know, the offenses, I think, are the focus of how they're just really so different and struggling on both sides, really.
It's hard. It's hard to win year in and year out if you don't have like Tom Brady and Bill Belichick in this league. It really is. Well, we've got so much more to talk about from the Sunday action, KK. Certainly Ravens, Texans, Lamar Jackson. We're also, like we said at the top, going to talk a little bit of Tua. We'll be back in 1 second. All right, we're back. Here's the Sunday afternoon action. And Kalen, let's start with what was supposed to be the game of the day, the game of the season. We all wanted it to be on primetime, and I guess in the end we're kind of thankful it wasn't in primetime here, because the Ravens just absolutely shellacked the Texans, and Lamar Jackson remains in just total control of every defense that he faces now.
It's amazing. I'm ashamed to admit, I picked the Texans to win this game just because for another story I've been working on, I've been doing some reporting on Deshaun Watson. And, you know, the word that everyone uses with him is he's a winner. He can win in those in those moments. Like, he can come from behind. You trust him in the fourth quarter. You trust him as that guy who has the grit to break through in tough games. And I mean, none of that was available today. So, I mean, that is literally the reason why I think the Texans, I was like, yeah, I think he'll pull through here. And so, yeah, we didn't see that at all. I mean, after the ankle injury, it looked pretty different and, you know, boring, if you will. It didn't seem like they were taking a lot of risks or doing much at all, which is sort of out of the ordinary for what we've seen from Deshaun Watson earlier this year. So, yeah, it was kind of a bummer of a game, but Lamar, amazing.
Lamar, and people are getting honest now because it's like every podcast you guys do is just about Lamar. And it's like, well, it's been a really impressive month for Lamar Jackson, so that's just the way it is. And I'll say, I mean, look, the Texans have been sort of a disorganized mess on defense all year. I was kind of wondering, you know, they brought in some new faces. They had the bye week. You have the extra week to prepare. Obviously, they know this is a big game for them as far as, like, playoff seeding. Not that the Texans should be counting themselves in as a playoff team quite yet. But, you know, this is kind of a big game for them. And you just kind of wondered if maybe they'd have their we're PG here, so their stuff together a little bit better for this game. And it wasn't quite the case, but it was also, we just saw a handful of plays again where Lamar is out there at like the second level and has a linebacker set up and just jukes the guy. And it's really...
they just like fly off of him. It's almost like he's like a repellent. Like, you get near him and then people just fall off.
I mean, it's like... People see, you know, 40 times and sort of say, like, oh, this guy must be a really good runner. Look at this 40 time and stuff like that. I always go back to, like, Tyrod Taylor was a guy who, he's fast. He's good with the ball in his hands. But generally, he just sort of runs straight to the sideline and that's it. Lamar, like, I don't know, it just decided he never wanted to throw a football again. He's so good. He just has such an incredible sense of setting up defenders and leveraging defenders as a runner.
It's
on top of the God-given speed and skill and athleticism and all that, just his ability to set up, you know, almost Barry Sanders-like, the way he's setting these guys up. That's what is really setting him apart with the ball in his hands right now.
Yeah, and you could see all of that in that, I think it was 39 yards, that sort of sealed the blowout win for them. And he just, it's just like he leaves like a trail of missed tackles in his wake. It's almost like... I don't know what the defense would do to stop him. He's just he's got that instinct that it's almost like, you know, he's just gonna go, he's gonna do that, then he's gonna go sit on the bench for the end of the game, put on his shades, and relax.
He's got nice shades. They're very nice shades.
Yeah.
Deshaun threw a sort of Ryan Fitzpatrick-ish type of interception in the second half. I mean, this one got out of hand real quick. I will say, and we do have to mention the missed pass interference call on fourth down play in the first quarter.
That was heinous.
Granted, I mean, whatever, butterfly effect. Maybe this one plays out slightly differently, although the Ravens obviously outclassed the Texans in this one. But that was brutal. My favorite part of that is if you watch Marlon Humphrey, who at one point has both of his legs off the ground as he's like draped onto DeAndre Hopkins.
That was wild.
But he ends up on the ground, and the first thing he does, he looks left, he looks right, and he looks left again, and then can't believe he doesn't see a flag, and then, like, signals, like, incomplete pass. Like, he was as shocked as all of us that that was not a flag on that.
Yeah, I mean, did Riveron come out with one of those videos to explain, to give a non-explanation about why that was not pass interference?
I hope not.
I don't even,
I mean, basically, Riveron's videos are like, he pulls up, He pulls up like the Wikipedia page of like American football and just reads a random package passage while the play runs. And
I liked what you wrote, where you said, if this isn't going to be pass interference, then let's just abolish the rule and live in anarchy. But honestly, we should, because that was just the most egregious example of it that I don't understand. That was insane.
It was nuts. It really was nuts. But MVP race update. Who did you pick in the midseason package?
I think I picked Russell Wilson, but I also might have picked Lamar.
that's a terrible answer.
I don't remember, because I might have picked Lamar as like offensive player of the year and then picked Russell as MVP. I mean, I could look it up right now. Who did you pick? All right.
Well, I picked Watson, and I've been saying to people who wanted going into this week, who wanted Lamar, I just kind of said, it can't be Lamar. He had like a really bad three-game stretch, and those games still count, and you couldn't objectively put him on the same level as Deshaun and Russell coming in. And that's what MVP is. I mean, he's the third best player, but the third best player doesn't get an MVP trophy. But after this one, though, I mean, obviously you got to slide Deshaun down, you got to move Lamar up, and he's very much he was in the conversation before, but now you could start to make more of a logical argument for him to be MVP.
Definitely. I think those were, I just looked it up. I picked Deshaun. So I picked neither of the people that I said. So clearly I was really, really into that pick. Feel really strongly about that one. But I totally agree. I think like these past few games have been like just statement games, really to show like how much of an impact he does have. And he's stringing them together now. And I think, you know, the rest of the season is probably going to play out in the same way that the last few have. I think he's definitely in that conversation. It's going to be really interesting to see how it ends up, because I think it's going to maybe end up being a pretty tight race.
I was going to say, and the way the Ravens have it cooking on both sides of the ball now, you just wonder if they're going to end up challenging for that. It's still going to be tough, but challenging for that number one seed. Can they catch the Patriots? Obviously, they have the tiebreaker at this point.
Right.
But let's go. Let's talk about Patriots Eagles. This is Patriots 17, Eagles 10. These were the MVP race in 2017.
That's right.
Wentz versus Brady. Right. Neither of these guys are going to win it this year.
Yeah.
For various reasons.
Right.
But Patriots win. And Patriots win, I mean, this one was ugly. It was weather down there in Philadelphia. Not terrible weather, but weather, it seemed
windy.
To be cold. I mean, the Patriots really are scraping together an offense right now. And this was coming out of the bye, and we were all kind of curious. Like, okay, Mohamed Sanu is in, N'Keal Harry is back, and now, you know, they had the extra week to work these guys in, and what will they unveil now? And it's just kind of the same thing, where it's just sort of, it's not last year where it was a lot of James Devlin and Sony Michel behind him and sort of getting the power running game going. Obviously, no Gronk, so you miss that chess piece element to the offense. And on top of that, they just I don't know they just don't really have an identity right now. They ran two gadget plays, and one of them got them their touchdown. The Julian Edelman throwback, and then he threw to an open door set. So. I don't know. I honestly don't know what they're going to do going forward when it comes to January football, if they end up like in a shootout with, let's say, Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think a few weeks ago we were talking about how they didn't have an offensive identity. And at the time it was like, okay, well, it's still, you know, a little bit, it was before midseason at that point, and it wasn't that concerning. Now I think it's a little bit concerning.
It's getting late.
It's getting late earlier, whatever that phrase is. So it is a little strange for them, and their offensive line is so bad. However, I think the good news, the light at the end of the tunnel, is I think Isaiah Wynn, the left tackle who was injured, he can return next week, week 12. And I think he'd been practicing, so it seemed like he was on track to do that. And I know that'll make Tom Brady very happy, because he'd been, I think, on the radio a couple times this season sort of pining after Isaiah Wynn, saying how much he missed him and how hard he was working to get back on the field. So I think that will have a pretty big difference, hopefully, for them. It should have a big difference in terms of you know, protecting Brady a little bit better and giving him some more time. But yeah, it's just weird over there.
No, it's a good point with Wynn, because it really is the first time that in a couple of years that you look at that offensive line and kind of be like, they're just not good enough right now. And that's really what offensive line play comes down to in the NFL is, can you pass protect just well enough? Can you be above the baseline? And right now they're sort of playing below the baseline for the Patriots to really be able to generate anything offensively here. Eagles have problems of their own. I mean, that no DeSean Jackson probably for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
No Alshon Jeffrey this week. Not that Alshon Jeffrey is a burner or anything, but that
he's better
is
than anyone else out there.
He's at least big. I always said. Because the Bills are, in my heart, my favorite people in the world. I always look back on the 2017 Bills where they were just running out just such a bad receiving core. And this
Who was that at the time?
Trending that way. It was kind of like,
I can't think off the top of my head right now.
Zay Jones was number one. And they had
Sammy
Deontay
Watkins
Thompson.
Had left by then, right?
Sammy Watkins was gone. Okay. They got Deontay Thompson and Kelvin Benjamin at one point.
Oh,
it was
It
was like, well, one guy's big and one guy's fast, and they don't have anyone who is big or fast.
Things.
So therefore, we have we have upgraded in a way, and it was terrible.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what this looks like right now. And like I said, like Alshon Jeffrey is at least big. Like you can sort of do the power forward stuff with Alshon Jeffrey. They couldn't do anything with those guys. They were running out there today.
I know. It was pretty bad. And you wrote the thing about Nelson Agholor. And he missed that catch at the end where, you know, he had a hand on it and maybe could have brought it in. But it looked like a long shot. I don't think it was that close of a catch, right? But
it was one of those. It was a very high degree of difficulty catch. It hit him in both hands, so therefore he will everyone who saves children from burning building in Philadelphia for the rest of their lives will have to troll Agholor when they do their local news interview.
Let's get that guy on the phone right now.
Oh my God.
Let's patch him
in. Oh, you know that guy's people are tracking that guy down right now.
He's probably on the radio station already, like going in on it.
It was just like it happened and I was like, oh, I never liked seeing people be the goat of a game.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh. And then I saw it was Agholor and I was like, oh.
Right.
This is double right here.
Right.
But he's sliding to try and stay in bounds. It's obviously it's a strange throw anyway. It's zero blitz.
Right.
Wentz is basically just tossing the thing up, hoping to get a prayer there. And Agholor didn't track it great. Again, unique throw, so kind of difficult to track that ball, but he was kind of over the wrong shoulder. It was just a very unusual play.
Mm-hmm.
And I really my heart just shatters for
thoughts and prayers. Thoughts and prayers, Nelson. We're with you.
Oh, that poor guy. But yeah, I know. Eagles, the good news for the Eagles is they really do have a very favorable schedule down the stretch.
Yeah.
They will be favored in their last six games. I do assume they will be favored next week at home against the Seahawks. I guess that could go either way, but I would think they would be giving points in that one. But at Miami, they have the Giants twice. They're at Washington.
Oh, nice.
And then obviously week 16. Week 16 is the big one. They're going to have to beat Dallas at home in all likelihood and sort of get that division back. Cowboys have a tougher schedule. They're only a game back, so it's still there for the Eagles.
Mike Greenberg tweeted this today, and he was like, the Lions are the best worst team, the best bad team in football, and the Cowboys are the worst good team in football. And I was like, yes, that's so great. So I sort of feel that way about the Cowboys. Like, I still think, I think the Eagles could, have a chance against the Cowboys, and I think they're very much still in it. I totally agree. I just think the Cowboys are the worst good team out there.
We'll get to the Cowboys in a minute. The Cowboys are weird right now. They're sort of still, it feels like they're feeling their way through, and maybe it's about to come together, but we'll get to them. We'll get to their victory, their road victory in Detroit.
Yeah.
But, Let's go Vikings Broncos here. Vikings 27, Broncos 23. Minnesota rallies from behind. We all wondered if they could rally from behind. Can Kirk Cousins win a game from behind? First it was, can he win in primetime? And they did that last week at Dallas. Now it was, can they come back from a big deficit? They did that against the Broncos. I mean, people are going to say it's the Brandon Allen Broncos, but you spot an NFL team 20 points. It was 23-7 going to the fourth quarter. That is a tall order for any team, and the Vikings came back and got it done against what is still a really good Broncos defense.
Totally. I think I saw a stat. It was really a great stat. The Vikings account tweeted it, and it was before this, in the last five seasons, if it was a 20-plus point deficit at halftime, teams were 0-99, the teams that were losing that game. And so now the Vikings have made it 1-99. So that's just how hard it is. Like you just said, that's how hard it is when you're trying to come back from a 20-point deficit at halftime. And I think Kirk has really proved finally that he can play, that he can come through in these big moments and mount these real comebacks. And it almost feels like when I'm picking the games every week, I always doubt the Vikings, which I don't know if I should or not, but just because of recent history with them, I'm never sure. Like, are they really what I think they are, or are they going to collapse? So I'm always constantly doubting them. And I feel like now I'm kind of like, they're legit. Like, I think the Vikings have proven to me now, this is a team that can come back from a big deficit. They're made of something real, it feels like, now, this year.
It feels like it, because this game felt like, remember when they lost to the Bills really early on last season?
Yeah.
And it was just sort of one of those head-scratching games. They were like 16-point favorites or something. Yeah. Not to turn this into the gambling podcast, but they were big favorites, and the Bills just came in and blitzed them. It was an early start for Josh Allen. Because they were down 20-0, and then they fumbled late in the first half here. It looked like the Broncos were going to get even more points going into halftime. Then Sendejo gets an interception on kind of a ill-advised throw, but also pretty sloppy route by the rookie tight end Noah Fant there. Mm-hmm. And things just sort of turn around. That was the other thing about this game. A lot of times when you see a big comeback, there's at least like that one play. There's a pick six,
right,
or there's like, you know, a
right,
strip sack that sort of changes things. This game just didn't really have that. Again, the Broncos missed that opportunity for points at the end of the first half. But other than that, there was no, like, you know, like a fumbled punt or something like that. This was just the Vikings not allowing anything defensively, including on that last possession. And they got some big plays. They put up points. Two big touchdowns off of play action, 54 yards from Cousins to Stephon Diggs, and then another play action, little boot, and a lovely little touch finesse throw over a defender to Kyle Rudolph, mm-hmm, who took it the rest of the way for a 32-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
So, impressive.
That last defensive stand was great. I thought for sure that they were going to break.
It was... And it was impressive because, look, Courtland Sutton really just stole Xavier Rhodes' lunch
today.
Courtland Sutton is tremendous. He's going to be he already is so good.
Yeah.
He's just going to get better. He completely won his battle with Xavier Rhodes today. So they were, the Broncos were putting Sutton in the slot, and Rhodes was getting help at that point, which meant you just had all the, you know, Tim Patrick's a big guy, Noah Fant. You just had these power forwards on the outside, and like, it was Trey Waynes and it was Jermaine Kearse, like, had to basically just man up one-on-one on potential game-winning touchdown throws, and they delivered.
They
made the plays.
Yeah, watching Xavier Rhodes today, I was kind of like, are you washed, as the kids say, for washed up? It wasn't a great showing for him out there as his shutdown corner days.
He's definitely not what he was.
Yeah.
He's been down this year, but today was the first day that was kind of like, oh boy, is this trending toward liability?
Right.
Again, Courtland Sutton is really good, though. So,
right.
Maybe that's what it was. And One other weird thing coming to this game, I know Jason LaConfora had the report that there's some seemingly mutiny type thoughts coming out of the Broncos coaching staff and locker room when it comes to Vic Fangio. They think it's poor communication. They think he's a little bit overbearing with the other coaches and stuff like that. But Rich Gangarella, the offensive coordinator, really doing a nice job with Brandon Allen, and they lost their number one receiver. Emmanuel Sanders is gone, and they're coming up with an offense here. It feels a little bit like what Scangarello and Kyle Shanahan did with Nick Mullins a year ago for the 49ers. On top of that, the defense just keeps on playing. They lost Bradley Chubb, and they're still really mm-hmm. good in the pass rush. Mm-hmm. They're really good in the secondary. I never would have thought. I mean, I'm not shocked that a 60-something-year-old coach maybe doesn't communicate with
right.
With the young people yeah. as well as others. Right. But this kind of looks like, you know, this looks like the Broncos kind of maxing out what they have at this point.
I agree 100%. I think they're making the most of what they have for sure. And they've been in so many games this year. Like, they've been in almost every game that they played. And yeah, they might lose in the fourth quarter because they have a hard time scoring in the fourth quarter and maintaining, you know, their offensive success from the beginning of games to the end of games. But it seems to me like this is literally the best that they can do. And knowing Vic Fangio just a little bit from experiencing him as defensive coordinator in Chicago last season, you're right. Like, he's a 60-something coach. Like, he's very much old school. He's kind of gruff, but the players all loved him in Chicago. The players were 100% fans of him, loved his coaching style. He's always been able to get the most out of players. And yeah, I think maybe he's not the best at communicating, and that might be true, but I hope he's not. I hope he's not on the hot seat, or I hope there's not a mutiny going on, because I think he at least would deserve a couple more seasons. Like, after one season, that's not really fair. And he's waited so long for this head coaching gig. So he can do it. He'll be fine.
It would be nice if the Broncos just kept a head coach for a little while.
Right? They should try that. Something different.
I was honestly wondering, as this game played out today, like at halftime, I was like, I wonder if Scangarello is going to be getting like head coaching attention right. pretty soon here.
Right.
If he's winning games with Brandon Allen, or at least sticking around in games with Brandon Allen.
Yeah, but, exactly.
And he's got that Kyle Shanahan coaching tree thing going.
Yep.
Something to think about.
He'll be popular.
All right, let's change gears slightly. We're going to go back in time to Saturday, and we're going to talk about Tua.
Oh, boy.
We're going to get back to the Sunday action, but we're going to talk about Tua because this impacts the NFL, obviously.
Yes.
The presumed, don't want to say likely, more likely than not, number one overall pick. Do you think that's fair, Kalen?
I think it's fair. I think Joe Burrow is the flavor of the month right now, and I think Tua probably would be the number one overall. Again, it just depends on who gets that first overall pick and what they think of the quarterbacks. Yeah. But he was definitely, like, the odds were probably best for him to be the number one guy.
Well, he dislocates his hip in the victory over Mississippi State. I guess the first thing I wondered is, and we'll get more clarity on the injury, as, you know, he was going in for the procedure on Sunday. And we'll know more when he comes out of it. But I was kind of wondering if he goes back to Alabama at this point.
I had that brought up to me. I reached out to several scouts to just talk about how does this impact his NFL future? Because obviously, mm-hmm. I mean, it will in a lot of ways impact that, because it seems to be a pretty serious injury. And he already has an injury history with ankle sprains, high ankle sprains, and getting procedures done on those ankles to speed up recovery. So you already know he's had a little bit of an injury history. So I reached out to a couple scouts just to see what they were thinking. And most of them brought that up as a fair question to be raised. Like, he has another year of eligibility. Will he go back for his senior, what would be his last year of eligibility at Alabama? And I think it's a really good question to ask, because obviously, like, he could benefit from it by sort of easing back in at the college level and then proving to the NFL, hey, I can still play. Like, here I am, you know, giving sort of assurance to everybody, like, I can play, I can come back from this injury. But then the downside, obviously, is that you're playing for free again. You're not making money, which is horrible. You're making $0 and you're risking injury again. And what if you're not as good? What if you struggle coming back from your hip injury, which is very likely if it's a serious injury? So then he's putting himself out there as a lesser version of what he was. And NFL teams are very good at talking themselves into players that they already liked. So I think I think personally he'll be better off entering the draft because now for 2020, because teams will remember what he was. And they'll read the medical reports, whatever they are, and they'll talk to him and they'll talk to the doctors and they'll look at all the MRIs and they'll see what they want to see. You know, they'll get the opinion from the team doctor, but then they'll be like, well, okay, but he was this and he could probably still be that. And, you know, we don't know how serious it is. So he could still be perfect. He could bounce back. He could become even better than he was before. Who knows at this point? But I think it would be better off for him to go into the draft now and then just see what happens, because otherwise he would risk showing a worse, you know, a decrease in his level of play.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think?
Oh, such a sad story. The only reason, and I think he should go in. If I was playing devil's advocate, I'd say he is at probably one of the programs you can count on one hand where they will have probably similar level of medical care as they
do
in the NFL.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, that's a good place to be if you're rehabbing, but I don't know. I think he should just go.
Yeah.
But it's also it's not me. I have no stake in this.
Right.
And we'll see what he ends up wanting to do. I think he really likes playing in Alabama, and that's why I immediately thought like, oh, this is like almost an excuse for him to go back again. Now
he clearly likes playing in Alabama because he's having these ankle surgeries to make sure he can continue playing, which I understand it. Like, he's a competitor. He loves what he does, and that is so great. But we saw Nick Bosa last year get season-ending surgery and then decide, I'm just going to prepare for the NFL. That's what I'm going to do. Like, I know I'm going to be a top pick. I don't want to risk that.
Mm-hmm.
And that ended up being a really smart decision for him, because now we see him in the NFL playing at a, you know, defensive rookie of the year level. So that was a great choice for him to make personally. And when you're someone like Tua, who's going to be such a high pick, and you sprain an ankle, I just don't understand. I mean, I know why he wanted to come back and play, but if he was thinking long term, he probably shouldn't have gotten a surgery to aid his recovery. He should have just probably sat for 3 games or 4 games or, you know, however long he needed to. And not that the ankle contributed to the hip in any way. I don't think it did. But it's just, I don't know. I think college players in general need to be thinking more. The ones with NFL potential need to be thinking more about the future earnings on the line. Yeah, but this is all in hindsight, obviously. So it's easier to say this now, knowing what happened to him. But yeah, it's sad.
Let's see.
It's a bummer.
Let's go from still the potential number one overall pick in 2020 to the number one pick in 2019. Cardinals go to 49ers, get the beat up and short rest 49ers, and just can't quite put it out. 36-26 is the final. It was much closer than that. It was actually 26-23 Cardinals late in the game, and Jimmy Garoppolo finds Jeff Wilson for the touchdown pass to put the 49ers up late, and then they get a scoop and score touchdown on the final play of the game, which that line did move down to -10, -9.5 a lot of places, so that either made some people's day or ruined some people's day, depending on which side of that you were on. But story of this game, Cardinals, like a lot of people will do, made Jimmy Garoppolo throw it, said, let's see you beat us, no George Kittle. Emmanuel Sanders was back, but probably not quite at 100%, though at this point of the year, who is? But Garoppolo delivered. He made two mistakes. He made one misread interception, another interception ended up being a tip ball, where it looked like it might have done them in it at that point. It was late in the fourth quarter. He got pressured. Ball came out a little bit high, a little bit behind. ended up getting deflected by his intended target and then intercepted. But they get the ball back. They go and score a touchdown, and the 49ers are winning again.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty – I think they that was huge for them in terms of NFC West standings, because that is such a competitive division with the Seahawks there, and holding on to that top spot in the NFC. I cannot wait for the Packers 49ers game, which is next week, I believe. I think that will be a really interesting game between those two teams, and right at the top of the NFC, both of them. But yeah, I think the 49ers did a good job coming back. I think that was, I think I read that was his Garoppolo's fourth quarter game winning drive. So nice to see that. And it was good to see Kendrick Bourne not dropping the ball today.
Caught a
touchdown. So that was good. He had a rough Monday night. So that was nice to see that as well.
He did. It was Kendrick Bourne had a nice bounce back game. Debo Samuel, another big game, 8 for 134 in this one. Garoppolo ended up throwing. His final line was 34-45, 424. That's a 9.42 yards per attempt average, which is very impressive. Mm-hmm. Four touchdowns and the two interceptions. But this is the question with this team. Can they? Can Garoppolo win a game if he has to win a game? And at least in this one, yes, it's only the Cardinals in their own building. But after playing 70 minutes on Monday Night Football, this is, I think, a very impressive win for this team.
Yeah, totally. Because that game was... That game against the Seahawks seemed like it took a lot out of both of those teams to get through that. And you could easily, after your first loss of the season, you could easily turn into a second, and then you end up spiraling a little bit from where you were. So I think that was really a necessary win for them. And it's interesting that the Cardinals were able to play them so close for both of their matchups this season. I think it was a 3-point difference in the first matchup. Is that right? A couple, like three weeks ago?
Yeah, Thursday night, though. Yeah. Home team on Thursday night always has the added edge, and the Cardinals did get that late, long touchdown.
Right.
Not to disrespect the Cardinals. Kyler Murray is, he really is, I don't want to hyperbolize here, but like, he was exceptional in this game.
Yeah.
I really dislike this offense. There just aren't very many open wide receivers. Maybe it's just the receiver talent isn't good enough at this point, but I really dislike the offense they're running and the results they get out of it. It is, I'm sure Kyler's comfortable in it, but it, like, he makes so many high difficulty throws, and it seems like, I don't know, it's just like, I'd like to see him just throw to a wide open receiver every once in a while.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? We can dream. There's a lot of games left.
I know.
Maybe next week for them.
Well, let's go to the lightning round. Let's lightning round the rest of these games. We got quite a few to go here.
Yeah,
that's okay. It's a lightning round kind of week. It's week 11. Let's start the Falcons. The Falcons just found out the season started, and they're just absolutely rampaging here on the way to 7-9. I guess.
My God.
For the second straight week, they just completely destroy.
Yeah.
A division opponent on the road. On the road. They go out to Charlotte and just destroyed Carolina 29-3. So obviously that's a big story. The Falcons sort of resurgence, even though it looks like it's going to be too little too late at this point. But the Panthers, I don't know. I know Eric Reed knows what he would give for this answer, but I don't know what the Panthers do at quarterback at this point, because Kyle Allen was shaky at Lambeau Field last week, but then he had the late drive where they were so close, and you were kind of like, all right, maybe this will work out. Maybe you just, you know, made one poor decision on the end zone interception in that game. But he was terrible in this game. He was reckless with the ball. He threw another end zone interception. He threw two others in scoring range in this game. He was atrocious. They keep on saying Will Greer's not ready. Boy,
I know.
I mean, you kind of wish the guy you took with a top 100 pick was ready to play this season, because I think they need someone else right now.
Yeah, it's crazy that like a few weeks ago, everybody was like, oh yeah, Cam Newton will be playing for another team next year. you know, and it's just like
nuts.
No. So yeah, I mean, that was really, really a bad day for him today. Really, really bad. And
yeah.
The one thing that I was thought of, this is more about the Falcons, but the one thing I thought of was like when they announced after their bye week that they had made some coaching changes, but all like internally with coaches who were already there, they didn't hire anyone new. I kind of like eye rolled, like, how is that gonna help your problems? You know, I did not give them any credit for those switches. I was like, okay, great. Like, that doesn't seem like it's gonna have much of an impact. But I will say, like, Raheem Morris taking over some of the defensive play calling and switching from receivers to their secondary seems like it's really helped. And I'm like, wow, maybe I should have given more credit to the internal changes that they made, because that defense is so much better.
In our defense, like, every coaching move Dan Quinn has made since that Super Bowl has sort of backfired in some way, whether it be Sarkisian or getting rid of Manuel and taking over the defensive play calling himself.
Right.
So there wasn't a whole lot of reason for confidence in that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, again, they have just shellacked the top two teams in their division on the road the last 2 weeks. And again, 9-7, they have to win out to go 9-7, and that might not even be good enough for the playoffs. But it's time to start wondering, like, are they about to save Dan Quinn's job?
Right.
We all assume Dan Quinn was dead man walking, and like, I think he might be able to keep his job.
I do too.
I mean, if they're going to play like this the rest of the year, they're probably going to go 19-0 next season.
I do too. And I think it said something that he wasn't fired midseason, because I mean, it seemed like he should have been. It was at the point of like no return almost, where it was just such a disappointing start to their season that I wouldn't have been surprised if they had gotten rid of him. But then when he was not fired, I think that was kind of a sign, like, the players do want to play for him there. I think, you know, they really like him as their coach, and I do think he can probably save his job with the remaining games of the season.
We'll keep it in the NFC South. Saints 34, Bucks 17. I was a little worried about the Saints coming to this one. They couldn't protect Drew Brees last week against Atlanta. They did fine. Brees looked as sharp as he has looked since returning from the broken thumb. Alvin Kamara gets a huge role in this one. Lots of touches, lots of yards. But the defense got it done without Marshawn Lattimore, which was that's what I was most worried about. I thought sort of the domino effect of losing Lattimore, and now you got to, you know, instead of Lattimore just shutting down the number one, Mike Evans, now you got to double Mike Evans, and now what happens with Chris Godwin, and it sort of opens up everything for the opponent. Granted, the Bucs were their typical sloppy selves, but this was a good performance by the Saints defense, and certainly a convincing win on the road here.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was Jameis threw yet another pick six without Lattimore. So that's not a, you know, the Saints defense did do a good job there still, but, you know, classic Jameis struggling there. So yeah, I think the Saints are still in pretty decent shape, and we'll see what happens next, but it was a strong performance for them.
Cowboys 35, Lions 27. I'll just say this, and then you can give your Cowboys take after this. But this Lions defense is making every opposing quarterback look like a Hall of Famer right now. And
so true.
At some point, you just kind of say, "Why did you trade Quandre Diggs? Like, what are you doing with this roster? And what are you doing defensively here?" Because everyone is lighting up the Lions right now.
It's so bad. Like last week, I remember, I can't remember the exact stat, but it was like they were pretty much allowing almost every opponent like close to 400, you know, passing yards. Like that was kind of a repeating theme of their season. And last week they made Mitch Trubisky look great. So that tells you a lot. And I read, like, Quandre Diggs, he talked to a Detroit reporter and basically said that the organization and him, like, had their problems, and that he his opinion was that they got rid of him because he was, like, too loud and, you know, just kind of rebelling a little bit. So that was really interesting too. It felt a little, I guess, New England-y, where it's like, if you stand out in any way, maybe that's where Matt Patricia is coming from with that. Like, he's just going to get rid of you if you're, too different from everyone else. So I think he landed in a great spot in Seattle where Pete Carroll is much more accepting of all of those types of different personalities and things.
Flexible.
Yeah, flexible is, is the good word.
I will say this, and I'm so close to like hot taking the Lions coaching situation, but I will say I was a young lad in New England in the early 2000s, and this early in the second year of Belichick's second season, a lot of people said the same thing about his team and his methods, and obviously that
worked out.
Jury's still out, but it's going going pretty well right now. Yeah. I will just note, though, last five quarterbacks against Detroit, 313.2 yards per game, 16 touchdowns, no interceptions, 31.1 points, 125.6 passer rating. That includes Trubisky.
It's so bad. They just don't, like, they rarely blitz, and so it's just, there's hardly any pass rush happening. Yeah, I don't know what is going on there, but their offense is so good. And that's why I say they're like the best worst team, because half of their team sucks, but the other half is really legit. Even with Jeff Driscoll, he's pretty decent.
Poor Daryl Bevel is out there like having one of the best years of any offense coordinator in football, and like no one cares because they're gonna finish like 5-11 and tragedy.
It really is.
Colts 33, Jaguars 13. Jacoby Brissett is back. This was about the Colts' run game dominating. Brissett made a couple of timely plays, including on a fourth and goal that sort of opened up the lead in this one. But it was also a lot. Nick Foles was back for the Jaguars, as we always know. If you've ever watched Chris Collinsworth do an Eagles game in January, Nick Foles loves throwing above the rim to his receivers. He's a guy who loves giving his guys a chance to do contested catch stuff. The Colts defensive backs were up to the task today. They were excellent in this one. They really got the best of the Jaguars wide receivers. Jaguars can get anything going offensively except for an early touchdown drive, and impressive win for the Colts, who are hopefully back on track after the dark days of the Brian Hoyer era.
Yeah, that was rough. It was nice to see the Colts win a game, you know, and not really have to rely on Adam Vinatieri, too.
I know. He did make all his kicks today,
yeah,
didn't he?
I think he did, yeah.
I took an eye off this game because it was not competitive.
But. Yeah, exactly. So that was refreshing, you know, to see Adam not be the center of either the scapegoat or the goat for them. But yeah, it was. I thought this was going to be like a really great game for Foles at first, based off of that first touchdown drive. I'm like, oh, like he was 5 of 7 on the drive. They scored right away. Nice touchdown to DJ Chark. Thought it was going to be going well. But then, yeah, Colts defense stepped it up. And the most beautiful celebration happened, but it didn't really count in terms of points on the board. But Quentin Nelson did a keg stand, which is honestly, that was beautiful. I always love offensive linemen celebrations. Anytime you have an offensive lineman and the celebration is just so much better, but that was like the best of the best.
It's just, it's good that they did score on this on the next play.
Right.
So yeah, Quentin Nelson lined up as the lead blocker, as the fullback. They gave it to him. It really didn't look like he scored, but they called it a touchdown on the field, and they got to do their celebration, which was nice. and then they overturned it, and then the Colts scored anyway on fourth down, which was a happy ending and a good celebration.
Yes, great job.
Raiders 17, Bengals 10 in Oakland. Raiders still right there in the thick of the playoff hunt in the AFC. This was like within a possession for an uncomfortably long time. It never really felt like the Bengals were going to pull even, but it was one of those things where it's like, oh wow, Bengals have the ball with like 2 minutes left and have to go 70 yards for a touchdown to tie this thing or go for two and win this thing. They just didn't, you know, Ryan Finley's not the answer there in all likelihood, and they're just not very good. But Raiders, nice win. Got the job done.
Yeah, my midseason hot take was that they were going to make the playoffs, but it doesn't seem that hot of a take anymore. I think they're headed that direction, at least for now.
it's not too hot to take, but it's still it's very dicey there in the AFC. Yeah. The Colts are back on track with Brissett, and we'll see.
Derek Carr rushing for that touchdown was really a beautiful thing. I liked that a lot.
He's been really good this year. And those are the kinds of, I mean, literally, he hasn't rushed for a touchdown in a very long time.
Right.
But those are the kind, like the second effort stuff, he just didn't do when he came back from the broken leg. Like, right. I just thought that right. would never be him. And it is him. He's making like second reaction plays here. And it's really nice. He's had a great, I think he is the comeback player of the year this year. I think he's had a great season.
Absolutely. Because it was like they were one of the teams last year who were in the conversation to possibly draft a quarterback.
Yeah, I think they had one foot out with it.
Yeah, exactly.
I think they were ready to run.
Exactly.
Bills 37, Dolphins 20. Nice to see the Bills just finally just kind of stomp on an opponent here, and kind of a reminder that the Dolphins are going to be an embarrassment most weeks. But this was Bills pass rush just completely overwhelmed the Dolphins here. A bunch of different guys had sacks. They end up having seven total. And Josh Allen, you know, he's never going to be accurate. What you do hope for is that when the big plays downfield present themselves, that he can connect on them. And he did that. And obviously, he's still making plays with his legs. I thought this was an impressive game. And it's just, you know, people will say like, oh, it's just the Dolphins. Dolphins are so banged up in the secondary. Dolphins are so bad. I don't know. When the throwers present themselves, make them. And Josh Allen made them in this game.
I totally agree. I don't really have anything else to add. Go Josh Allen. Good job taking advantage of a very sorry Dolphins team. But he did it. You're right. He did it.
I assume you're saving it all up for this last yeah. one. Jets 34, Washington 17. Sam Darnold sort of getting back on solid footing here, and you know, Jets sort of stringing wins together. Dwayne Haskins sort of made up for it statistically in garbage time, but boy,
it's bad.
He doesn't belong on the field right now. He's just not ready.
He had that one good pass to Terry McLaurin, his Ohio State teammate, but it didn't even count because of a holding call. But that was a really nice throw. But other than that, it's bad. And like the thing that makes me angry about it is first of all, he only had one season in college, so he was already off to a severe disadvantage when compared to any other quarterback with literally any more experience than that coming into the NFL. And then he ends up at a team that like clearly did not have a plan for him. And when you get, I mean, when you draft a quarterback in the first round, like you, it's all about the what's going to be around them and the plan around them and the plan to develop them. And you knew, you had to know when you got Haskins that he was going to need a lot of work because he'd only had one season as a starting quarterback. And experience at that position is so essential to the job. Yet they drafted him and then, you know, they weren't going to play him. Okay, the plan was we're not going to play him. Then they fired Jay Gruden. Then, okay, now we are going to play him. Now he's our quarterback. I mean, and he's going to have a new head coach next year. There's going to be a new offense. It's just a total cluster. And I feel bad for him because starting off a career like this is really hard to bounce back from if you wind up in a bad situation.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with just sitting your quarterback for his first season. Lots of guys did it, and now they're like Hall of Fame guys. So maybe other teams should do it. But this one was 34-3 Jets at one point in the fourth quarter, which is probably a more accurate indicator of what this game played out like. And gosh, I'm pulling up the numbers right now. Let's see. Before those two garbage time drives, let's see. This was. Oh, I'm doing the math all wrong. 225 minus 118. This was 48 plays for 107 yards until those last two drives in garbage time.
Yikes.
For the Dwayne Haskins-led Washington team, that's 2.2 yards per play, which none of that adds up. Again, that one throw was absolutely spectacular to Terry McLaurin, but yeah, otherwise this will just not get it done.
No, it's going to be a long road for him.
But we got it done, Galen.
We got it
done. That's my segue. with the properly too long lightning-ish round as well.
Great.
It all worked out. All right. The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Kalen Kaler and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brady. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave us a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.